Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mint, hour number two of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Taking your calls, 803-0550, the number two call. We're hoping to hear from Sal Capaccio in the next half hour or so. Still waiting on when Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean will speak, whether it be separately or together, different days or on the same day. We'll get that information to you when we know it definitively. But let's go back to the phones here and get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We start off this segment with Tom on the line. Tom, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well.
I hear a lot of talk about Crosby, but nothing about Khalil Mack. He's a free agent.
Yeah, Tom, he's going to be an interesting one. Thanks for the call. I think the difference is he's kind of, it seems like, on the backswing of his career. I think he's ultimately mentioned too, you know, I think there's been rumblings about maybe a retirement there. There is a difference in age. Khalil Mack's going to be 34 in February, and he does seem to be on the downswing of his career. Just going off sack numbers, 23 with the Chargers, 17 seemed to be return to form. It's a career high for him, but in between that, from 2019 to 2024, only had one season above 10 sacks. It was last year, this past season, playing in 16 games, had 6 sacks. Again, that just going off that number, but even tackles for loss, 2023 he had 21, 22 he had 12. Last year he had 6, and again, 34 years old, but it would be much cheaper than trading for somebody like Max Crosby, who he himself is 27, 28 years old. And in 12 games played this year, had 7.5 sacks. And the last 2 years, 12.5, 14.5. He has been a serious problem. Tackles for loss as well have been way up there. 22, 23, 17. QB hits, 36, 31, 20. You know, he's one of the best players at his position in the NFL. I think that's maybe a big reason why Khalil Mack was one of the best players at his position. He arguably is not that anymore, but was that for a very long time. I would be all for it, though, in the sense of give him a one-year deal and maybe draft another edge rusher as well to go along with him, to have maybe Mack here for a year and then go into the next season or two with somebody different, playing opposite with Rousseau and Epinesa and those guys that they already have. I think that would be a really good move if they were to go for Mack.
I think it'd be really fun, too, just the fact that, of you know, he played at UB, he got drafted out of here.
We fixed the failings of 2014.
Yeah, like, I think it'd be fun. Like, the story behind it and everything like that, too, would be awesome. But
it would definitely be a fun aspect of free agency in the offseason of, like, hey, you know, it's your first time back in Buffalo. Well, not, you know, it's not like you've avoided the city since, but, like, you know, first time playing in Buffalo since you were a UB Bull. Like, how's that feel? You know, he's credited UB a lot. He is still kind of the face of that football program.
Right.
Whenever, over a decade later.
Yeah, if you think about UB or if you ask someone about UB, they know Khalil Mack came from there.
Yep,
so that's
100%.
Also kind of a bit of a draw there. So, like, obviously not on the field stuff, but, like, outside of that. But you got to find help where you can, right? Like, I don't fully love it just because of the fact that, like, it just feels like another cork in a hole. Like, you're plugging a boat that's leaking in 100 different places, and you are plugging a hole, but, like, it's not
a long-term solution.
Right. It's just a band-aid on a crack in the foundation of your house. Like, it really needs to be, you get him here and he's kind of like just a helper for a little bit.
Because do you remember his first season in Chicago in 2018? Like, he gets traded there real late in the process and is just a force of nature.
Yeah.
His first game, would he have like 2 fumbles, a fumble return for a touchdown, like 2 sacks? I mean, he's absurd. He was really good that first year in Chicago. Also fit the Bears like a glove in terms of, like, he's going to be an elite defensive player.
If only he was there now.
And they probably love him now.
It's It's always it, that part has always interested me too because of his just like his career track and like where he's done well in relation to like when he's left. Like the Raiders never really got better after he left, but
no, they did not.
When he left Chicago, that was kind of the start of the uptick. They're not, you know, good or anything because mm-hmm. they're still figuring it out, but they started in the right direction after he left. And now if he leaves LA, they're also headed in the right direction. So it feels like, unfortunately for him, everywhere he's leaving is kind of getting better.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's getting there, like right place, wrong time sort of thing. But if he comes to Buffalo, I think it'll be the exact opposite of that, where it is still the right place, but it's also the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go next to Alan on the line. Alan, you're on WGR.
Yeah, I just got about four comments and quickly and I'll hang up. Number one, if you remember, and I don't know if you guys go back, when Reed was in Philly, at the end of his career, he was horrible there. He got fired, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And he won a division, a couple divisions. He got to a championship game, but he was the Marty Schottenheimer, everybody used to call him. He comes to Kansas City. They draft a few years later, they got Mahomes. Mahomes, without him, Reed would win 10 games a year, maybe. The same thing with Allen. I think without Allen, McDermott and the Bills win 6 to 7 games because that's how much he means to this team. My other point is this. If you look at that, a couple of things I'm just kind of bouncing. The other, at the end of the game, that blitz that Spagnuolo threw, that's the exact same blitz he threw against Allen in Buffalo. And Allen seemed to get out of that run for the touchdown. Nance called the play of the year. And if you read, and he talked about that too after postgame, that just time they didn't pick it up, that time they did. And it's just a matter of two different times. But another thing, too, everybody's saying Allen with the last drive. Yeah, but come on. 4 games against Kansas City, they're giving up 31-plus points a game, and they're averaging almost under 29. With that, if you look at that, that's my whole point. I mean, you can't put that on Allen. You got to make some stops. But I feel going into next year, I think we're a much better situation than we were last year. I don't know how good Miami's going to be. I can't see the Jets or the Patriots being that great, maybe 7-8 wins. I mean, I can't. I mean, everybody thought, oh, you know, Rodgers, I mean, they're on, you know, they were picked to be ahead of the Bills by a lot. But I just think, you know, another loss this year was really frustrating. But I'm a big Orioles fan, and I just want to share this with you. I get a lot of Ravens stuff. I don't know how I do that.
Mm-hmm.
They are very unhappy with the fact that Lamar can't get over the hump.
Oh, yeah. They are not thrilled with John Harbaugh at all.
No, I just read a comment. I got an update that Harbaugh can't get Lamar over the hump, and they don't believe Lamar's going to get that Super Bowl. That's just same kind of thinking. Now, here we have a lot of hope with Allen. I mean, Manning, after 9 years, finally got to the Super Bowl, and the Allen stats are much better than Manning's were after 7 years. So, but, I mean, you would be shocked if you heard some of the things coming out from Baltimore about Lamar, and he's not going to, he's 3-5 in the playoffs. Allen is 7-6. I trade him in a heartbeat for Allen. So we only hear what we hear here, but I just want to hang up and listen to you. Take care.
Allen, thanks for the call, man. Yeah, the Reed situation is always kind of a fun one to look back at because it is weird. It's tough to compare him necessarily to McDermott in terms of, you know, even the Marty Schottenheimer comparisons. I do know in 2013, his first year with Kansas City, they go 11-5. They've got Alex Smith, and they lose to Indianapolis in that wild card game that they led by a ton of points, and it's a roaring comeback by Luck and T.Y. Hilton, and it's a second half, you know, storming.
Yeah.
And it's arguably Luck's greatest moment in his career. He does get to an AFC championship. Ultimately, that's Deflategate, by the way. But but arguably, his greatest moment as a Colt is that wild card game against Kansas City. But to Reed, that was like, of course. Why would he not lose that game? That's Andy Reid. And you look back at his early Eagles success. The Eagles, for a while, were the Bills just, instead of getting to Super Bowls, they lost in the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
His first year in 99, they go 5-11, and then for the next 5 years, they make the playoffs. 11-5, they lose to the Giants in the division round. Then it's the championship game run, where they go to 4 straight championship games. They ultimately only win one. They lose in 0-1 to sort of the last years of the greatest show on turf, the Rams. Then they lose to the 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that great defense with, I think, Brad Johnson was their quarterback. And then 2003, they lose to the Jake Delhomme, Steve Smith Carolina Panthers. They're losing to different teams in each of these. Then they eventually get through in 04 when they get T.O. and then they lose to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Then it's a bit of a downswing for them. They ultimately do make another NFC Championship game in 2008. They lose to Kurt Warner on the Cardinals' kind of miracle run to the Super Bowl, where they ultimately lose to Pittsburgh. And then it's a real bad run for him, and that's ultimately the last season he wins a playoff game in Philly is 08. They lose in the wild card round in 09 and 10, and then they don't make the playoffs in 2011 with an 8-8 record. And that's actually the dream team too, by the way, for the Eagles. Where their backup quarterback Vince Young is the one that gives them the name. It's not Mike Vick. And then 2011 they go 4-12 and he's fired. And that's why I've always with the Reed and McDermott comparisons, it's not totally true because you're missing the point of when Reed was fired. He was not fired after making a ton of NFC Championship games and not getting there or not getting over the hump.
He was fired after doing all that and then falling apart.
Yeah, and then eventually, you know, the quote-unquote message got stale and stuff like that, and he was there for a long time, from 99 to 2012.
Right.
He's there for a long time.
If you think about it, like, let's say this year was more of a year in transition. The Bills go 8-8 or, mm-hmm. 9-7 or something like that, and then next year it continues down. Then it's the same kind of track. Then it's the same sort of mindset, except instead of the conference games, it's the divisional round.
Yeah. And so with McDermott, that's the thing. We've all talked about it. In this run, when Allen has been the guy, so let's not look at Jacksonville, let's not look at Houston. When Allen has been the guy, so 2020 on, it's been the Chiefs and a single year where it's been Cincinnati.
Yep.
And that single year in Cincinnati, I know it's an excuse, but it's where I'm at. That team ran out of gas.
Yep. There was a lot going on.
Everything went on in that season. They were done. They were shot. They weren't winning a Super Bowl that year. They just weren't.
And there was also all the stuff that looked like it was something was happening with Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we'll never know what the locker room conversations were actually like, but it all kind of boils over to next year, and then we see how that all ends.
Yeah.
So there definitely was something else also going on there off the field in terms of locker room strife.
Yeah.
Like that there's all sorts of things going on in that Bengals year where it's it's tough. But yeah.
I don't totally know about the blitz. Hearing Osiris Torrance talk about it.
I went back and I found the dots for that game in week 11. Sorry, Allen, but it was the exact opposite of the blitz. Like, nothing like that.
Remember,
I'm looking at the dots right now. When Allen decides to take off, three defensive linemen for the Chiefs are heavily, they are contained by the rest of the Bills' offensive line. And the right tackle, the one edge rusher, I can't tell who it is here, Spencer Brown's got him locked up, and that's when Allen takes off. All of the safeties and corners are staying home. There's a guy on Cooper. There's a guy on Shakir, the safeties drop back. Like there's no blitz.
From what I remember of that too, it was Chris Jones ad-libbing and ultimately getting got.
I think that is Chris Jones
by Torrance, and it was Ryan Vandermark. Spencer Brown misses that game. Where this one, Torrance mentioned that.
Yep, I see now.
But it was Torrance mentioning that they didn't typically blitz like that.
Mm-hmm.
That they were expecting something entirely different to what they'd seen on tape all year, and that's what kind of got them.
Yeah.
Is that the Chiefs legitimately were, if it's to be believed now from what the Bills are saying, legitimately were hiding stuff until the playoffs.
Now, I will say, though, when you look back at the beginning of the snap or the beginning of the play, the way they're lined up, it looks exactly the same. The way that the Chiefs lined up defensively on this play where Allen runs in for the touchdown in week 11, the defense is built exactly the same as it was on that blitz at the end of the game against the Chiefs in the playoff game. The safeties and the corners are right up on the line, and then they immediately drop out. In the playoff game, they didn't. And that's what got the Bills.
They are right there, though. I mean, they did not play all that great of a game, and they were right there at the end. You're dealing with the dynasty of our time right now in the NFL. Arguably, if they win the Super Bowl against the Eagles, I think they're in arguably the best dynasty the NFL has seen, especially with the quarterback play in the AFC and the teams they've had to play. The fact that for a multiple of these Super Bowls, they've had to come back down late in the fourth quarter, they've just been so unbelievably impressive, but deeply frustrating because unlike the Patriots, it feels like the Chiefs are actively keeping you from multiple Super Bowl chances. Yesterday, I think it was Ross Tucker, or maybe it was Trista Crick, brought up the idea of like, how many Super Bowl appearances do you think the Bills have if they were in the NFC?
Oh.
And it was just kind of like instinctively.
Yeah, I think
probably
Trista. I was listening. Yeah,
it was like, oh, instinctively, probably a few.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a few.
Oh, easily. I mean, think about the competition they would have to go up against.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have to get past the 49ers and
the Eagles.
and maybe the Rams.
So you're getting past Brock Purdy slash Jimmy Garoppolo, if we're going to the later years, and Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Instead, you're locked in the Thunderdome that is the AFC, where every year it just is like, oh, this guy's putting up historic numbers that we've never seen before in our lives. And his team went 9-8. I'm talking about Joe Burrow when I say that. I mean, and then you have Lamar and Josh doing the same thing, putting up numbers we haven't seen before.
Yep.
And they're duking it out. And then there's the Chiefs doing the exact same thing. Next up on the line is Scott. Scott, you're on WGR. How are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
So, I just had to say I was a season ticket holder for 27 years. We had 6 tickets. And this year, it's just so frustrating. But I'm not mad. You know, it's like the caller before. If Andy Reid didn't have Mahomes, well, guess what? If Norwood was 5 feet to the left, we're holding the Lombardi. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And to sit here, I mean, I give you guys all the credit because I couldn't do your job. I know you're getting paid, but, I mean, 4 Super Bowls, 17 years, 20 years looking at Brady, 7 and counting looking at Mahomes. I mean, God love the fans in this town. I was born and raised here, but I'm really, you know, like some other friends of mine, they're really done now. And, you know, when people say, well, you know, it's transition. Well, what does that matter? Or, you know, looking at other teams that haven't made it. It doesn't matter. We were there. And I think the search, you know, people, I know you guys got to talk about it for the next year. But is a draft choice going to get us closer to 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1 or 13 seconds? I mean, those things aren't in the draft. And Bass's kick last year, you know, he just missed it. So there's 31 teams that aren't good enough every year, you know. And I just give the fans a lot of credit for staying in there. I'm going to enjoy it because at least through October, the golf courses are pretty open on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm going to be doing, man. I can't invest it anymore. And, you know, it's like I think you guys had it the other day. There's a lot of people that are so frustrated. I mean, they're not even watching the bowl. They're like, and it's not just the Chiefs, just fatigue of football. I just think it's been so long in this town, and if you're cursed or whatever, it is what it is. You know, no reason to get super mad at players, but that's all I had to say, so thank you.
Scott, thanks for the comment. I totally get it. I think about this a lot, too. I think as much as many of us will miss it, like come like March, April, especially the draft, we'll be like, all right, football, let's go, baby. Let's go. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Like I've had my few months off.
Yeah.
I think it's also a blessing where we do have 7-8 months off from football. Where I mean, there's little activities here and there, but you have
mini
a moment.
Camp, training camp.
Yeah,
and
the hope and can start to marinate again. Because, I mean, yeah, we're 3 days off of an AFC championship loss in which you were right there. I totally understand where Scott's feeling. But I also think a draft choice or two it can change it. The Bills were getting stops in the second half. If they had a better edge rusher that maybe they get in the draft,
yeah,
that forces a stop in the first half, gets them off a third downs, because that was a huge problem this year, I think it's different. Look at the Chiefs right now. Rashee Rice. I heard a lot of people here on the station, too, talking about like Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy next year. Hold the phone. He has 8 felonies, and the league has multiple times shown you they will suspend guys a year later. Von Miller is one of them. I don't anticipate Rashee Rice playing much of, if any, of the year next year with Worthy. But you look to them, Worthy came on in the second half of the year for the Chiefs. He made a massive difference for them. I mean, that it was a huge difference. Where for the Bills, Keon Coleman, Dalton Kincaid necessarily didn't. But if Kincaid was just a little bit better, does he maybe come up with that catch late in the game? Then all of a sudden, it's not 4th and 5. You're in field goal range if he catches that. Or at least, I mean, that's where the line was. You're
the target
line. The target line, yeah. You're right there, and you've got more than enough time to – you're not focusing on, all right, well now we got to kick field. No, you're still driving.
Mm-hmm. You have lots of time. You have 2 timeouts. There's a lot going on there. But I look at, you know, Kincaid specifically, and I understand you catch the ball with your hands, but he has 2 big issues in his knees. Like that was
definitely a
contributing factor to some of this stuff too. But now he has the whole offseason to get healthy. To go back to your point about third downs – that's something where I look at the defense as a whole, not necessarily the players, but like, and obviously the players play a part in this, but like the scheme itself, how the Bills are trying to stop teams on third down. We talked about this a little bit before the show, and I think you were right in this. If they have an elite edge rusher like 2022 Von Miller in the beginning of the season before he gets hurt, the Bills are way more effective on third down. But I do also think that the fact that you're relying on one guy or maybe two guys to come up with a big stop on third down, it's not a great plan. It can be foolproof if you have one or two of those guys that can always get you the stop. But what do you do if those guys aren't there? What if you do if those guys are off the field? What if they're hurt? What if, you know, they're neutralized for that day? What's your backup plan? How else are you going to stop teams on third down? That's the thing for me where I look at there's tiny bits of these of McDermott's defensive scheme where, for the most part, since he's been here, it has been foolproof. It's been one of the best defenses in the NFL. It's been awesome.
Yeah.
How do you figure out the parts that are starting to crack? How do you figure out third down defense and get to that point where you're not going to be worried about it every time it's out on the field? You're not going to be worried about, oh, are they really going to just give them third down again? Like, what are we doing here?
It's third and eight, and it feels like third and inches.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And that's the thing. I understand the secondary is a lot different than when McDermott first got here. And again, like I said, it kind of relies heavily on those edge rushers. So if you can get one, your problems are in the large part go away. But you kind of want to have more than one plan for a very important moment in every single drive, right? Yeah. Like that's kind of where I'm at this point.
Yeah,
if you have a better plan there, then you get off the field quicker, and you can give your offense, you can give your MVP level quarterback more time to go do what he can do best, and you also probably won't have to have him score 35 points or more per game to win the game because you're keeping the other team off the field.
It is wild, though, looking at that. And this is something I brought up late last week. The Chiefs were off also a horrendous third down defense.
Yeah.
And I think most would argue they have better high-end talent on defense than the Bills. They were also abysmal. Both were like 28th and 29th, respectively. Yeah.
I think the Chiefs were 26th, but still.
Oh, yeah. But like they were both terrible on third down defense.
Yeah.
And then, funny enough, both were great at third down conversions on offense. Next up on the line, Sean joins us. Sean, how are we doing this morning?
Good morning, guys. I think you guys just started to hit like how I feel. Bean is great in the later rounds in the drafts. And I'm not saying the first and second round draft picks haven't been contributors, but they are not. We haven't got that game changer. I mean, you know, Kincaid was supposed to be, you know, the Travis Kelce per se, you know. Coleman just, he was hurt for a few weeks, but he's still not that game changer. Now, he may turn into that, but our first and second round, I mean, we haven't made it. And our offense has gotten those first and second rounds picks the last couple of years, and we still haven't really lit it up. I mean, you know, that we're just not finding the game changers. Bean, he finds good players, good character guys, that they seem to fit in and may contribute. They contribute, but they don't change things. Now, this year, are they going to go defense? Probably, right? I mean, we definitely need another corner.
Yeah,
I mean,
that too. Yep, yep. You know, we're talking about a lot of line.
I mean, but, you know, they tried safety. Bishop, again, contributing towards the end of the year, not a game changer, not lighting it right up. And I'm not, you know, it's tough picking 30th, right? But that's where he seems like he's missing. Game changers in the top of the draft. I mean, obviously, Elam has probably been his biggest bust, right?
Yep. But without a doubt,
I think that's where Bean misses in the first round. They seem to, the later round draft picks, they seem to nail it. I mean, they contribute. More than they don't, right? But the first and second round, we really need a game changer if we're going to help Allen right now.
Yeah, Sean, thanks for the call, and I'm glad you brought this point up. I, you know, looking back at the Chiefs and Bills, both their draft history,
they're kind of the exact opposite of each other
because you look back a few years ago, not that long ago, that was the Chiefs. Yeah. They weren't hitting on these first-round, second-round guys. You're looking at Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, Willie Gay Jr., but they hit L'Jarius Sneed in the fourth round. Then you go to 2019, Mecole Hardman's kind of a miss. He was okay for them, not great. Juwan Thornhill, he kind of hit for them, but then their third-round picks, kind of nothing. Lucas Niang, he's okay. They have real big problems on the offensive line. And then 21, it seemed to kind of switch with Nick Bolton and Creed Humphrey both in the second round. Those two are absolutely two of their better players. 22, McDuffie, George Karlaftis. They did, though, massively miss on Sky Moore. Massively miss. That's one of their biggest busts they've had up to this point. 23, Felix Azua. He's another edge rusher. He's been useless. 2 years, three sacks. Carl Loftus, only a year behind him, 24 and a half sacks. They play the same position.
Yeah.
And then this year, Xavier Worthy. You know, that's kind of a hit for them. Also in 23 as well, Rashee Rice. They've sort of kind of flipped the script on them where they weren't really hitting all that much. The Bills, we've kind of talked to it to death, and we got to get to another a break here. But hopefully you kind of see a switch that the Chiefs made where they're not just hitting these late rounders. Now all of a sudden the switch happens, and they're starting to hit some of these guys in these later picks of the early rounds. You've got a first and 2 seconds right now. This would be the year you kind of got to do it.
Right. Like, don't just pick really well in the first round now and flip and not pick well in the later rounds, right? Yeah. Like, you want to try to get the consistency across the board here.
803-0550, the number two call. Coming up after a quick timeout, Sal Capaccio joins the show. We're going to look a little bit more ahead. Sal has an article out now on some of the unrestricted free agents for the Bills and kind of what the Bills could target in free agency and also the draft as well with the Senior Bowl going on this week. We'll do that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt with you on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Changing the head coach is, I think, preposterous. This is a defense that they got to add a difference maker or two on their back end, their back seven. Outside of Taron, Taron's really good. They're nickel. Rasul Douglas, pretty darn good player. But they don't have a difference maker in the back end. Like, Kansas City's got two of them, Justin Reed and Trent McDuffie. Outside of, you know, two or three other really good players. Like, I think Buffalo, if you're going to ask how they figure it out, it's they got to get a difference maker or two on their back end that's really going to help them.
Dan Orlovsky, ESPN, and I think that is going to be a talking point for the next few months. The defense was a constant concern for a lot of Bills fans. Josh, me and you have mentioned it, the third down defense. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get some stops in the second half of the Chiefs game. Not really so in the first half, and even a lot of the Ravens game kind of felt like if it weren't for the turnovers, that game could have gotten away from them very, very quickly. Ultimately, though, they were built off turnovers, or at least really took advantage of them this year. But for more on free agency, the draft, looking ahead, we go now to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, are you already ready for the draft?
No.
We'll get you there. Don't worry. We're going to get you there.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot to go on before that. Let's see, the calendar, your free agency. I'm much more, you know, I gotta go in sequential order here. You know, you got the combine, and then you have free agency, and then you have the owners' meetings, and then you have visits, and then you have the draft. I'm not quite ready for that yet.
I'm ready for the draft in like February. Like, when the combine rolls around, I'm like, we've been at this too long.
See, here's the thing,
though.
This is what I always get. This happens every year, right? Where I make it a point to point out, like, you're going to be talking. We're all going to be, and rightfully so, right? Like, about, oh my God, they got to take this, got to take this. And all of a sudden, free agency comes, and it completely changes everything you need. Like, it's not even anywhere close, generally. Like, oh, they need this, they need that. Oh, wait, they signed that guy for, they don't need that anymore.
And it happens every single year. All the mock drafts you read in January, you're like, this is completely outdated. They added three defensive tackles. We're fine.
That's exactly right. It happens every single year. So let's get over that hump first.
And so to that point, Sal, you got an article up at our website, WGR550.com. Bills having 19 pending unrestricted free agents. So let's start there. This is a year in transition, but a lot of the players at Locker Cleanout mentioned they want, in a sense, to run this group back. They all really enjoyed what this team had to offer. And ultimately, as much as we're all kind of trashing on the game on Sunday, they were right there against a team that won 15 games and is looking at an unprecedented third straight Super Bowl. It's not like they do have a ton to fix, arguably.
So I think they're in a much, much, much better position than they were 1 year ago heading into the offseason. I mean, last year was all about how are they going to shed some of this salary. There's still a little bit of that to be done, but they did a lot of the stuff last year in order to be flexible this year, in order to have a little more space. So they're going to be in a much better position. Now there's going to be guys who you have to make decisions on, as far as guys like Von Miller, right? You can definitely save a lot of money if you move on from Von Miller, how you want to do that. I'm sure there's going to be a discussion about Matt Milano, although, you know, that would be more of a post-June 1 thing if they wanted to do it like a Trey White. I'm not suggesting they would or they wouldn't. I think that they probably keep him. But the point is, there's going to be guys in the roster. You're going to be looking at that. Then you have to, but to start with, who are the guys that you have to attack as far as what to do with their pending free agency status? The team has 19 pending unrestricted free agents. I am not including Micah Hyde. He is retiring, so it would be 20 with him. Anyone who was on the practice squad who has not signed a reserve futures contract is a pending free agent. Anyone on expiring contract is a free agent. There's 19 of them. They have two pending restricted free agents. That's Shane Buechele and Quentin Morris. I do not expect either of them to get qualified at the minimum restricted tender. That means that will make them an unrestricted free agent unless they sign them before that. And then one pending exclusive rights free agent, Alec Anderson. That should be easy to get done. You just offer them the minimum contract. So out of the unrestricted free agents, 19 of them, I posted them at Sal Sports on X if you want to go check it out. I really think there's only a couple names that are true, like, guys that you say, okay, let's get... There's not even, like, super needle movers, to be honest with you. I think it's just Ty Johnson and Mac Hollins, to be honest with you guys. Like, I think that's kind of it. The other guys are like, okay, it'd be nice to have Amari Cooper back, or, okay, it'd be nice to have Rasul Douglas back. But as Dan Orlovsky just said in that clip coming back, you know, they have to maybe make some changes on the back end. So I think they're in a much better position. Look at the guys who are unrestricted free agents. There are no, like, big, big names that you say, oh, my God. Like, no one that you would even consider giving a franchise tag to.
Sal, you bring up Rasul Douglas there, and another name that pops out to me is a guy like DeMar Hamlin. Excuse me, DeMar Hamlin as well. I understand, like, they might want to make changes on the back line, or the back end, I should say, but why not also bring back some of these guys? Like, Rasul Douglas might not have had the best season, but isn't he kind of an ideal piece to have in terms of veteran leadership for maybe a new piece coming in, whether it be a rookie or a free agent? I mean, he's a reliable, at that point, he'd be a reliable backup sort of guy, right?
Sure. I mean, he could even be a starter again next year.
Right.
I mean, no doubt. I'm not suggesting they should let everybody walk. What I'm saying is I don't think there's anyone that's a priority. Oh, my God, we have to get him back. You know, for a guy like Rasul Douglas, you probably have other guys who are kind of similar types of players at ages out there who would be free agents. Now it becomes down to money. Like, does he want to come back? What's the price he wants? I'd be all for Rasul Douglas coming back. I don't think it's anything you should go over the top to try to resign him. You need someone like him. So why not him? I agree with you. DeMar Hamlin's an interesting one. You know, I think that a lot of people saw that, you know, DeMar just wasn't quite the athlete or making the plays and, you know, on the ball that a lot of people saw from Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. He wasn't that kind of safety. And let's be honest, I think Cole Bishop has kind of been trending towards taking over that role anyway. So going into next year, your safeties are probably Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp. That's your starting safety. So DeMar becomes a backup, and there's nothing wrong with that. DeMar can be a backup. He knows the system. I'm fine with that. He can be a special teams player too. I don't think you go into next year thinking DeMar Hamlin's a starter. You certainly shouldn't pay him starter's money in free agency. So then does he have an opportunity to go somewhere else? So I think a lot of those discussions have to happen with a lot of those guys. I think a guy like DeJuan Smoot is the same way. DeJuan Smoot's a nice player. Is he a guy that you need to really pay a lot of money to bring back? Probably not, because you can go out and get guys kind of similar to him this offseason.
In the same vein there as DeJuan Smoot, Jordan Phillips, I mean, didn't he come out and say kind of he wanted to just basically stay here? And if he didn't get to sign here, he wouldn't really go anywhere else. He'd just kind of hang out. Like, what do you anticipate with that? Like, he sounds like
Jordan
really
Phillips always wants to stay here.
I know.
And best years are in Buffalo.
And you know what? It's great, too. Like, yeah, his best years are in Buffalo. So he's another guy where I look like I'm looking at these names. And I know, you just said, you weren't saying, like, don't bring these guys back. But there are a few that really jump off at me where I'm like, yeah, like, they're a no-brainer, kind of like a glue guy. You know, like, they provide stuff on the field, but they also really provide a lot in the locker room.
Yes. I mean, there are definitely guys like that. Again, listen, you're going to have 90 guys in the roster, guys, right? Like, there's only 53 right now. It's ironic. They actually do have 53. That's not only because 53-man roster. There's actually a couple guys, counting all the guys they signed to reserve deals, taking away all the pending free agents, they have 53 players right now. So that means they have to, unless they release some, which they probably will. So let's say they get down to 50. Let's say they release like three guys. They get down to 50. You got to sign 40 more guys. So why not a Jordan Phillips, an Austin Johnson, a Quentin Jefferson? No doubt. So all these are little discussions. Again, this is not a black and white, oh my God, you got to have this guy or not have that. You could bring in guys like, bring back guys like Jordan Phillips. He's older though. That's probably a minimum type deal. And those are probably guys that you don't resign till later in the process or early in the process. It's probably not something you do, you know, it's either gonna be something you want to do right away and they want to come back and go, okay, we'll sign you a minimum deal. Or you just kind of wait, you feel out how free agency goes. You say, you know what? We kind of need a guy like that. So let's go out and, you know, revisit it.
Sal, last thing for me here. We took a caller in the first hour, as many people have been talking about already, just, you know, last 3 days since the loss, we heard Dan Orlovsky talking about it, you know, adding playmakers on defense. And while, you know, this caller mentioned, yeah, we're all talking about Miles Garrett, Max Crosby. What about Khalil Mack? He is going to be a free agent. Of course, he has a connection to Buffalo. He's going to be 34 years old. Had a 17-sack season in L.A., dropped it down, I believe, to 6. Would you be kind of interested in maybe a reunion with Mack? Or I think where I'm at, personally, Sal, I'd be okay adding Mack, but I'd like to add somebody else maybe in the draft or somebody younger that you can sort of build on.
It's funny you say a reunion with Mac because of Buffalo, not because of the Bills, right?
Yeah, right, you know what I mean? Right. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, 6 sacks this year. I mean, he wasn't quite the same player, but, you know, maybe he's still got something. Isn't this kind of like the Von Miller signing a couple of years
ago?
That's
exactly what I thought.
Maybe
yeah.
Not the same kind of money. You know, he can help you. They've done this. They've had these older pass rushers, Leonard Floyd coming in last year, who did a nice job. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. He still did have 6 sacks, but that's kind of what you've gotten from like a Greg Rousseau or AJ Epinesa over the last several years, right? And so what does that money look like? Now, he is only a year removed from 17 sacks. So, you know, let's keep that in mind too. And, you know, I'd be for it. I don't think that you have to go spend a ton of money if that costs. Like, if you have to replace, let's say they move on from Von Miller, you're taking a bunch of dead cap money on him, but you're saving money. And then you go sign Khalil Mack. I'm not interested in just replacing all that money with Khalil Mack because I think that it's kind of foolish to do that. And then you're kind of spending twice a little bit, if that makes sense, for an older pass rusher. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's gonna be fascinating to watch, especially, and I know we don't want to rush ahead too much with it, but hearing already from a lot of these draft experts talking about how talented this defensive tackle, this edge rusher class is, I'm interested in how maybe a guy like Khalil Mack kind of is seen on the market, especially with his age and somewhat of the dip in production. Sal, though, before we let you go here, I'm assuming no new updates yet on when Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are going to speak?
Nothing official from the Bills. I'm thinking maybe tomorrow's the day. Usually, you know, it's only a day or two after, you know, locker clean out. You know, we're already at Wednesday. So my guess is, you know, they'll do it on tomorrow, but that's unofficial. And as soon as we know, we'll let everybody know. And obviously, if it's here during the show at that time, if that's the case, you know, we'll bring you that sound live.
Sounds good. Sal, we'll keep our ears to the ground. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. That's my thing with Khalil Mack. Like it just feels like what they've done over the last few years. I love the idea. I love the name. But for me, I've got to have somebody else there that I can start building a future towards where Mack is just kind of there of like immediate production along with a rookie giving you production. And then, all right, you get out of here. Now this guy takes over. And and that's where ultimately where I've been big on Max Crosby. I'm not waiting on anything. I'm getting a guy that's going to come in and give me double-digit sacks, a ton of QB hits, a ton of pressures, and he's going to be a difference maker. He's going to be a legitimate problem to deal with.
I do think that if you were to go for a Khalil Mack, it would be after you already know
I agree. You're out
on Max Crosby or Miles Garrett or whoever else may appear here.
That something like that is not materializing.
Yeah. Another like I'm just kind of looking through names here. Like this is very like early on stuff. I mean, we're day 3 of the offseason, right? Like it's not like we're, you know, super in on the books on all these guys yet, but
I don't know what you're talking about, man. I'm already talking about Marshall edge rushers.
I'm in the free agency, but like looking at like
free agency,
like Josh Sweat and Chase Young, they're both free agents.
Oh, Chase Young, what could have been?
Yeah, like I mean, it, I'm not he, saying
he,
they're like
he's not the same player in terms of the personality. He has totally become like Clowney for me, where just like I know all of the talent is there.
Yep.
But I think for Chase, it's been a lot of injuries. Yeah. Clowney was a lot of like, I might want to play today. I don't know. We're going to figure it out as we go.
Jadeveon Clowney, I will never forgive him for re-injuring Carson Wentz. Never.
Oh, his first playoff game? Yep. He's like three plays in?
Yeah. No, I will never forgive him for that.
That's a shame. You might want to get over that.
No.
No.
Because that's why Carson Wentz isn't respected.
That alone. Oh,
well,
okay.
Injuries. And he was one of the guys that injured him. So, hey,
that's a take. All right. 803-0550, the number to call. One more segment here after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Expo Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get you ready for Sabres Live. The Sabres did win 7-2 yesterday against the Boston Bruins. We got time for one more call here, so we go to CJ on the line. CJ, you're on WGR, my friend.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I just wanted to throw out real quick, as far as talking about the draft and who we should grab in free agency, I think it's weird that since we've had Josh Allen or have known he's been good since 2020, that we don't strengthen his strength.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, let's be dominant. I mean, if you have a strong arm and you know he can run around, not to run, but to buy time for your receivers to get either deeper or open, why not get speed? I don't know why we don't grab speedsters. I understand grabbing all these route runners because that's where he grew with Stephon Diggs, and we had Curtis Samuel and all these older Beasley. Like, but why not extend? It helps everybody. Now that you have a good old line, the safety can't come down and do anything. It takes away from people going so much QB spy because not only do you have a good old line that can run block very well, you have a very good run blocker who can read the line or find the holes. Speed changes so much. Just like when we started this season and we had Amari Cooper coming to the team, you can't play man like you used to, like when Baltimore beat us.
Even look at the screen game, CJ, even look at the screen game the Bills developed this year with Shakir. If you got a guy that's running in the low 4.4s, I mean, it's a difference maker right there.
Well, I completely agree, mm-hmm. and that's where I'm just confused on why we don't do more of that. You know, I'm not here to say the coaches or anything are bad because they got us to the AFC Championship, and out of 32 teams, we're one of the final four, so to speak. But yeah. It's more or less what's the conversation? This conversation started, I think, last year. I'm not going to keep going. I'm going to let you guys talk. You got to go. But even when we had Nyheim Hines and we were complaining about how we're utilizing him, what's the conversation when we draft people and how we're going to utilize them? I know we looked at Coleman as a number one, not a speedster, not a route runner, but he was just considered a number one coming in. But let's draft speed. Why not trade for a Waddle?
I know.
Right. This is time to eat. The division doesn't scare us. Our division doesn't scare us at all. We know we can get home field advantage. We've shown we can get to the playoffs consistently, but. And I know people want to talk about defense. I think a defensive tackle is the most important piece just to help Ed Oliver or Russo.
Yep.
I think
CJ, we do got to run, though. Thanks for the call, man. But on that point, I think they are going to go defense in the first round. But there are guys like Isaiah Bond who dealt with an injury this year that may not be a first-round pick. Jalen Royals as well is a name I'm going to be talking about a lot out of Utah State. Both are considered speedsters. The big problem is, though, you don't want to always look at the 40 times. Look at the top 40 times in NFL success rates. It's not that high, especially at the wide receiver position. But I do want the team to get faster. Josh, you brought it up too. The last guy they really had legitimately fast at the wide receiver position, probably John Brown. And, well, that really worked out for them for those like 2 years towards the end of his career. But that's going to do it for us today. Coming up next, after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. This is WGR.